looking forward, we see the same big forces at work, but stronger. Modern mercantilism and the AI revolution are accelerating, they're deepening, simultaneously producing a new macroeconomic paradigm, a new geopolitical paradigm, and a new technology paradigm in AI, with all of these things interrelated to one another. And so as that's happening, cyclical conditions, they remain near equilibrium in most countries, which has been actually good for assets this year. But now from this point forward, markets are extrapolating that to continue into the future. And so we think that that's particularly dangerous because in addition to the direct impacts that these policies are having on growth and inflation, the interaction of these paradigm shifts is prone to unpredictable tail events. I think that that's common sense. When you're changing the rules of the game in so many different ways in a way that interacts with one another, you're bound to have highly unexpected outcomes from that. But that's also consistent with complexity theory. Complexity theory relates to the simultaneous interaction of such paradigm shifts. And I'll just give you, I'll read a paraphrase of a definition of complexity. It's where multiple simultaneous paradigm shifts interact, producing an environment prone to nonlinear, unpredictable outcomes. Now, unpredictable is a problem when you're a money manager, because the whole idea is to take positions related to the future, and now the future is now unpredictable, at least certain elements of it. And so the only response to unpredictability is diversification, because you don't know what it will be. All you can do is try to make sure that if and when whatever happens, it's just not a big deal, right? And so diversification is really crucial in this environment, which is actually contrary to the concentration that exists in a lot of portfolios. The second thing is that is agility, which is that as the unknown becomes known, now given the cause-effect linkages of the system, what follows from that? And so the ability to adapt to as the unknown becomes known is really, I think, crucial in this environment. And I think the last thing is a healthy degree of paranoia, like just not knowing, not being too confident. And I can guarantee you that's been, you know, central to, you know, our process. So I'm just going to take a snapshot of each one of these big forces, and then we'll get into how these things are playing out. So modern mercantilism is accelerating, and it's broadening globally. One of the characteristics of modern mercantilism is that the actions of one country provoke a counteraction by another country, and you're seeing that every single day now, right? We've defined modern mercantilism up here as when governments play an increasing role in national wealth and strength, prioritizing self-sufficiency and industrial policies protecting national champions. Trade deficits are viewed as transfers of wealth and to be avoided, and you have this transactional approach where you have to pay for market access and maybe pay tribute for, you know, defense or whatever. Now, over the course of the year, we've been tracking all the different actions and announcements and so forth related to this and putting them into these categories. And I love this picture because it just tells you how pervasive this has been over the course of the year. But what you also see is, you know, early in the year, you know, at least there was a little bit of space between the dots. Now we have the dots piling up on each other day after day, intraday. And so this process is accelerating and it's broadening and it's just creating a much more complex macroeconomic environment. And obviously we're seeing that now in terms of US-China. We're seeing, you know, the collapse of the government in Japan. We're seeing the collapse, you know, problems in France. We're seeing the US government shutdown. We're seeing massive AI announcements, and so these things are coming at us hot and heavy, right? Going to the AI, I think the most critical thing to understand about AI is this issue that to get the incremental improvement in performance, you need an exponential increase in compute. The breakthrough technologically a few years ago was essentially that you could raise the performance through brute force, i.e. just jam more compute through the system. The problem is that to get the each increment of performance, you need an exponential increase in compute. And so what this chart shows is this shows compute power but it's on a log scale, right? So compute power is rising linear, but on an exponential basis. And that, unfortunately, creates the need for an exponential increase in money. And so these massive announcements that we're getting reflect where we are in that cycle. To get that next round of improvement in performance, we need massive amounts of money, massive amounts of compute. The question would then be, what happens after that, right? Are we at the end game, or what happens from that point forward? And so now questions are obviously arising where, as to what's going to be the payback of this and so forth, and we can get into this more. But also I want to just step back and put this into a historical context. A few months ago, I did a study of the history of the what we call national champions, which is, if you look back over the last 125 years, you know, every decade you've had a dominant industry and dominant companies in that industry. And so we took, let's say, the top 10 market cap at the beginning of each decade, and we said, what was their share of the total market cap? And that's this middle line right here. But also in the years leading up to that, what was the progression? And then in the years leading after that, what was the progression? And you don't see national champions last forever, right? This case, the blue line, has been the most rapid acceleration in history and is now sitting at the highest concentration in history. And so from a historical context, just be aware of how this can unfold. So now the third thing I want to highlight is, you know, these forces are operating against the cyclical equilibriums that exist across economies. And you know, we define equilibrium according to three criteria, which is spending in line with output, debts in line with income, and normal risk premiums across markets. That's an environment that's a nicely sustainable set of conditions. And we're coming out of a period of disequilibrium, obviously, from high inflation in the West and deflation in China. And what's happened is that largely through the actions of policymakers, and particularly monetary policy, you know, we've brought things back into line really almost everywhere. We're inside the range right now. And so that's been good. That's a good thing for assets. Normally, when you're inside of that sort of range, you're getting roughly normal. It's not a particularly great environment for assets. It's roughly normal risk premiums when you're in that situation. But also what you see here is that when you look at this history, you don't stay at equilibrium for long, even in normal times. And so here we are, we're not in normal times. And so I think to be extrapolating is, not a lot of confidence in that. On the other hand, I think the markets are expressing confidence. And so particularly, I think, U.S. markets. When you look at U.S. markets here, in order to get a risk premium in U.S. equities over the next 10 years, our calculation is that you're going to need earnings growth actually a bit higher over the last 10 years, and the last 10 years is one of the best ever. And so we're extrapolating that into the future. You also see that over here in terms of the discounted earnings growth rate in U.S. equities. It's at century-level highs. The only time it was exceeded was in the dot-com. Not so much in other countries. Other countries are a little bit better priced. So we're essentially in the United States discounting a relatively steep, optimistic slope of outcomes. And then when you look at things like implied volatility and credit spreads, it's actually a relatively narrow range around that, essentially, right? So that's why I say steep with confidence. But also, I think an element of complacency, because one of the things I look at every day is I look at the underlying supply-demand composition of the U.S. stock market, where we break it down into how much is being driven by dollar demand and how much is being driven by selling. Okay, and here what we see is that this is the increase in dollar demand that supported this rally, but that's actually started to roll over as the markets continued to move up. Most of this recent rally has been supported by a contraction in selling, i.e. it's been a low volume rally, just less selling, which is, I think, an indicator of complacency and vulnerability. It's vulnerable to surprises. So I think those are the big forces, and things are unfolding according to those forces. And I think today, if we zoom in on what some of the big ones are that I see, number one, fiscal is ramping up globally. It's a powerful force. and it has implications for the supply demand for capital. The second one is that Trump policies are beginning to flow through now to inflation, employment, profits, and also trust. Now, monetary policy still matters, but we have two hands on the wheel. Two hands on the wheel is a lot more complicated than one. U.S. markets are up, but actually they're underperforming in global currency terms. And I think we have something we call money illusion is at work right now. And then given the exponential demands and the economic impacts of AI, I think the question starts to arise, you know, what are the limits? What are the feedback loops in that system? And then finally, China and Asia deserve attention in portfolios. Geographic diversification is valuable from a risk reduction standpoint, but I think today it even makes sense tactically.